Hello and welcome to this podcast discussion powered by Old Mutual Investment Group, talking about what is driving some of the gains that we are seeing, on the local Johannesburg Stock Exchange, and whether or not, some of that is marking a fundamental shift in how things are happening in the market, or, whether there are other factors that people need to be considering. Basically, we're taking a pulse check of what's going on in the market. My name is Mudiwa Gawaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and I'm going to be your host for this fascinating conversation. And joining me is Jason Schwartz, who is a portfolio manager over at Old Mutual Investment Group. Jason, greetings to you today.
Hi, Mudiwa. Good to be here.
Now, Jason, I think a good place for us to start is to maybe talk about the fact that, in the week that you and I are talking, the JSE has, seen a big rally, seeing a number of records being set, on a number of trading days, closing higher and higher. But does this mean that we are marking a shift in foreign investment sentiment? For SA, or are there other things that are at play?
Yes, correct. I think the JSE has been on a bit of a tear this week. I think last week also we were up about 3%. July was up 4%. March and April also good. So really a strong momentum or pattern of momentum building on the JSE. I guess, does this, back to your question, does this mark some sort of shift in terms of foreign sentiment? I would say, unfortunately, no, not or possibly not yet. Because if you look at the JSE data, if you look at equity outflows, it hasn't turned around yet. Despite some of that positive cyclical data points, we've got like Eskom, we haven't had load shedding in 150 days. The political landscape has somewhat turned. It still seems to be that there's been consistent outflows. And if you look at the numbers, around 87 billion rand outflows year to date versus last year about 72 billion rand. So still very lackluster. And especially if you consider that the bond market, we've actually seen some inflows. There was one week in June, I think, after the GNU announcement where there were some inflows, but quite consistent outflows from foreigners. And if you look at foreign ownership also, a slight uptick in terms of foreign ownership. If you compare June to December last year, I would say that a lot of the sentiment has been driven by local fund manager positioning. That's probably driven it. There's been managers that have had a lot of global equity or global allocations that have, thought about global risks and valuations and perhaps brought some of that money back, given the change or the nature of the change in the political landscape. It's a bit of a tough situation thinking about positive news and flow sentiment, but the data just hasn't suggested that foreign investors have turned in terms of their view of South Africa as a preferred investment destination, or not yet, I'll say.
Now, I like the fact that, we are in that territory where we talk about the not yet, because it does point to the fact that at least we are acknowledging that there has been some recent outperformance, on the JSE, as well as its resilience, during the global market downturn in recent weeks. We saw a flurry a couple of weeks ago, not to say that the JSE wasn't affected, but compared to other markets it was less so. The question then one can then ask, Jason, is whilst sentiment might not yet have turned, is the JSE ready to capture a different place in global investor portfolios that might end up, helping to turn some of that tide for itself as the market, as well as other emerging markets? They often say that, success happens where opportunity and preparation, meet. And the basic question is the JSE prepared? Is it in a good place, a good enough position, to occupy something like that?
Look, I think it's in a better position. And you're right. We had a few tumultuous weeks a couple of weeks ago, late July and August, where there was a series of data points that suggested that this the global soft narrative landing was in question. A lot of that was around this specific SARM rule, which was triggered, that historically has been quite an excellent U.S. recession indicator, and kind of market shifted from positive global risk appetite to poor risk appetite. And, you know, historically when that happens, you know, South African asset classes, because of our high beta and we're quite cyclical, they tended to underperform, you know, do very, very poorly during those downturns. But as you say, it was quite surprising to see some of the resilience in our equity markets, as well as our rand and bond yields. So, yeah, I think we have the ability to create a better identity for ourselves in the context of global or an emerging market portfolio. Foreign investors are often looking for those kind of self-help or reform stories, and they're not necessarily buying assets because they're cheap, because we've been cheap for a while. And it's difficult to understand what's unlocking that valuation. And there's a list, a long list of opportunities that can drive our growth from, you know, where it was at 1.5% to 2 to 3%. And if that happens, I think those asset classes then will be able to exhibit better volatility characteristics, specifically lower, or should I say, downside volatility. And, you know, we're no longer going to be used as a kind of a liquid proxy for emerging markets, because there's potentially a good growth story happening here, and we've got to compete with the likes of the Brazils and Indias and Taiwans and Saudi Arabia, you know, where those markets have great idiosyncratic or quite unique drivers that investors want to allocate to. So I think there is potential for us to reestablish ourselves as having a different role in that emerging market context. But it's a little bit of wait and see. And I think global investors are kind of just waiting and doing their homework first before they allocate.
Jason, maybe as a quick follow-up, you know, to that particular point, something that I'm curious about is there enough buoyancy either in the local market or within the emerging market economies, you know, to just support some of the opportunities that you've identified, or does South Africa necessarily need that global, you know, investor support to make, you know, some of those things happen?
Look, I think if you look at positioning, locals, you know, have allocated quite strongly towards our domestic asset classes. The local banks are full of nominal bonds, so I don't know if there's a lot of capacity for local investor positioning to drive that. And, you know, I would say that South African fund managers have always had a value bias. And because of that value bias, we prefer to buy cheap asset classes. And, you know, last year or the year before, when Regulation 28 changed and we saw a lot of that outflows, you know, be allocated to global opportunity sets, you know, you've seen some of that reverse. So, you know, I don't know if we're going to be the marginal buyer to push asset classes another 10 or 20% higher. I think at the margin, there is still some dry powder and some reallocation in local pension funds. But the big shift and big unlock of value would have to be foreign investors to come back and allocate to South African as asset class, because that's, if you look at our foreign ownership levels, it's fairly low and it's been coming down over the last 10, 15 years. So not enough buoyancy, I think, in local liquidity to take our asset classes higher. We really need the foreigners to step in.
It certainly makes sense from that point of view. We often hear, you know, that South Africa is a relatively small and open economy. And I guess what you've just described for us is, you know, some of the realities that shape the financial markets or, you know, of such an economy. And, you know, what all of that means, that that reliance on, you know, some of the global capital or those global investors. But if we just turn our gaze away from the South African market for a moment to sort of look at the one that tends to drive a lot of action globally, the US. You and I have sort of alluded to the fact that the fears of a US recession rocked the global markets a couple of weeks ago, and you know that resulted in quite a huge sell-off in more than one part of the world. Is this still a concern, you know, and, you know, how will an actual U.S. recession actually play out in local markets?
I would say there should still be a concern. If you look at market action, I think the concern is fairly low and complacent. The outcome of U.S. recession itself, you know, perhaps a bit of a red herring, because typically you only find out long after it happens that there is a recession, and markets tend to move in advance of that. But it's quite hard to ignore some of the data that we've been looking at around activity that's slowing, around weaker labor markets and unemployment that's rising. And often, you know, it tends to rise quite slowly and then quite fast. And there has been some distortions. But the key issue that we are thinking about is that when unemployment starts rising, there's this virtuous circle where you've got job cuts and layoffs that drives consumption lower, and that causes further layoffs. You know, obviously the U.S. consumer has, you know, been in a good, has had good balance sheets, but they started to wind those down. In totality, I think it's still difficult with high conviction to say whether we're going to experience a U.S. recession in the short term. I would still say the risk is high. And if you look at history, when we've had U.S. recession, that does play out quite poorly in local markets. So, you know, I would expect if we do have a recession or even some sort of slowdown, this could weigh on local markets. I don't think that they would probably fall as much as, you know, they typically have, given, you know, what we discussed earlier about, you know, some sort of recession resilience. You know, I think we do have some tailwinds to guard to kind of protect us from a U.S. recession. We've got interest rates coming. We've got probably a little bit better growth in the next couple of years because of more stable energy, some progress on Transnet. I don't think South Africa, coming back to the previous question, I don't think we are going to be kind of that whipping boy during recessions anymore. But, you know, certainly the data, the more short-term data does suggest to us that we need to be wary and we need to be aware of, you know, the dynamics around, you know, that, you know, growth is slowing in the US and rates are high, and there is likely to be some sort of slowdown. Whether it's a deep or shallow slowdown is still yet to be seen, but you know, we've positioned to be more cautiously positioned against that outcome.
And when it comes to, you know, the various outcomes in the United States, obviously, we've got those recessionary fears that we've just spoken about. But the other issue is elections. At the start of this year, there were estimated to be over 70 elections around the world. South Africa, you know, having one of these elections that's now out of the way. The next one that a lot of people are looking at and will likely shape global markets is obviously the U.S. election. And especially, you know, as there have been a number of revelations along the way, such as Joe Biden bowing out, you know, all of these things, right? What scenarios is Old Mutual Investment Group working with here, and what are the implications of that, you know, when it comes to, you know, the local markets?
Yeah, Madiba, I think, you know, you can't discount how, you know, how unpredictable the U.S. elections can be, given that it's likely just going to be a few thousand votes in a handful of swing states, given their kind of electoral college system. But, you know, we probably had the base case when Biden was still in the race. We were leaning towards a Trump presidency just because, you know, that scenario was quite likely if you looked at the polls and Biden's poor poll performance. Kamala Harris, since then, you know, her performance has been really good. You know, she's got this ability to fire up a crowd a lot better than Biden had. And, you know, I think a lot of her policies that she's been talking about are quite fairly sensible and not as far left as I think a lot of people have thought. So in terms of base case, it's too close to call, I would say. There's lots of permutations and scenarios to think about. What we kind of focus on is, if Trump becomes president, what are the implications of his policies? So, you know, if he reintroduces America First, he cuts taxes, there's deregulation, there's higher tariffs on China imports. You know, thinking about what happens with the dollar in that scenario. So, you know, does the dollar strengthen from tariffs and tax cuts, or does the dollar weaken because there's trade tensions and disputes and capital outflows? It's really difficult to say. Obviously, the dollar has a big impact on emerging markets, and that has a big impact on South Africa. So we've shifted away from a Trump presidency as base case to, you know, quite an even split at this point. I think whoever becomes president, you know, we need to also be talking about some of the fiscal constraints in the U.S. Debt to GDP is forecast to go to 122% over the next 10 years. You know, lower revenue. You know, I don't think either Trump or Kamala Harris presidency is able to tap the brakes on spending. I do think that a red wave in terms of Republican presidency and, you know, has the House, I think, you know, that'll be closer to, let's say, you know, no news. I think for local asset classes, probably an unfavorable outcome if you think about, you know, more of the Chinese imports and protectionism and poor global risk appetite for markets. I think if Kamala Harris becomes president and we get some sort of blue wave, you know, then you've got to talk about kind of the tax wall or higher taxes and the trade-off between that higher taxes and, you know, what that does to U.S. corporate margins. But also probably a better global trade environment. So, like I mentioned, our base case has kind of shifted. I think it's quite an even balance between the two if you look at the polls. But we remain attentive to some of the policy implications, specifically on the dollar and fiscal deficits.
You know, just a couple of months ago, it was almost a shoo-in that, you know, people were expecting that Donald Trump would become president. You know, a lot of polls sitting with a 65% probability, you know, in that regard. It's been very interesting just to see how the entry of Kamala Harris, you know, as the Democratic nominee has sort of shifted some of that sentiment and also shifted the base cases and scenarios that people are looking at when it comes to the outcome, you know, of that election, and then obviously the policy implications and markets implications thereof. So we'll be definitely waiting to see how all of that progresses, you know, over time. You know, in the past, you'd expect that elections have tended to be, you know, red in one election and blue in the next election. But, you know, this one, like you said, it's too close to call. So let's see how the year progresses by the time that we do reach the polls at the end of the year. So, Jason, on a last point before we let you go, you and I have spoken quite a bit. You've taken time to, you know, sort of weave the thread of what's going on in the global economy and, you know, the factors that are affecting the local financial markets. Given everything, you know, that is going on, where or what what do you believe is the likelihood of value being unlocked in local equities? I guess in layman's language, you know, it's to ask, where is the value in a situation like this?
Do I think, you know, there's certainly better likelihood to unlock all of that value than it was 3 months ago. I think the environment, you know, there was a lot of pessimism around 3 months ago. I still think, you know, I still think we're a little bit behind the eight ball, and that we still have a lot of challenges and a lot of homework to do. South African assets are still undervalued, maybe not as much as they were, because they have re-rated, certainly. As we mentioned earlier, we need foreign investors who are still largely sitting on their hands waiting for US elections. They're waiting to see what the Fed does and what the impact that would have on emerging markets. For now, I would say that our positioning in terms of our moderate overweight in SA equities and local bonds probably reflects some optimism in terms of the risk-return trade-off around what's changed in the political landscape, given we've got more centrists in government with sensible policies that are prioritizing growth-enhancing reform. So we're fairly optimistic about that unlock of value. But, you know, we continue to do our homework and think about what that roadmap looks like and what still needs to be done in terms of some of the policy headaches around Transnet and Eskom, and just a government that was slapped together from different parties that, you know, we don't really have any experience in working collaboratively together. So a lot of optimism, you know, I would think, but and certainly this reflects, I would say, quite a high possibility that we can unlock value in local equities. And, you know, we are positioned in that way. But we, in terms of the long-term story, I think there's still lots to do. There's lots of challenges around the South African economy to get our growth higher that'll further unlock that equities. But, you know, I think at this point we're happy with better prospects than where we were 3 months ago.
All right. So on that note, that's where we end off for today's discussion, just giving a little bit of a pulse check into what's going on in financial markets. Jason just giving us a positive note at the end there to say when all is said and done, there is, you know, optimism that has returned, you know, to South African markets. Jason, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Madiba.